بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. Dear brothers and sisters, سلام عليكم ورحمة الله. I would like to first start with a hadith from the 8th successor to the Holy Messenger on the issue of khums. It's a relatively long hadith, but it's only one or two sentences I want to bring forth. He says, فَلَا تَزْوُوهُ عَنَّا وَلَا تُحْرِمُوا أَنفُسَكُمْ دُعَاءَنَا مَا قَدَرْتُمْ عَلَيْهِ فَإِنَّ إِخْرَاجَهُ مِفْتَاحُ رِزْقِكُمْ وَتَمْحِيصُ ذُنُوبِكُمْ. He says, so don't, in relation to the khums, don't take it back from us, i.e. don't avoid giving it. If you remember, the khums, one-fifth of it, is the imams, is the successor of the holy messengers. Don't take it back, don't avoid giving it. And do not, to that extent which is feasible, suppress yourselves from our supplications. وَلَا تُحْرِمُوا أَنفُسَكُمْ دُعَاءَنَا. Don't act in a manner, i.e. by avoiding the payment of khums, you will be suppressing yourselves from the supplication and du'as of the imam. And then at the end he says, verily, its payment is an opening to your sustenance. Paying the khums will open up your sustenance and the purifying of your sins. And ahadith like this are numerous, just showing the importance of paying the khums and some of its benefits. Okay, in slide 12, so far, I've tried to explain two different interpretations of annual gains, two definitions. The majority of the jurists, of the jurisprudence, they are of the opinion that the annual gains are a belonging which is yours and that qualifies as a gain in absolute terms, be it a manner of earning, or even I think something which isn't a manner of earning, but qualifies as a gain, such as presents and other things. And there was a minority position which regard the definition as your belongings that are your own, but which qualify as an earning. So this is a more specific definition. Its scope is more narrow than the previous one. It has to be an earning. So things like presents and prizes and other things, they are not levied the khums. Okay. Now, if we go to slide 13, here we see a diagram with a time scale, a term which you will hear more and more as we progress through the course is one's khums year. Now, I'm not going to speak about the definition or the different meanings of what the khums year is, only very, very loosely and very broadly. I just want to explain one or two things just for you to have this in mind, so you have a picture of something when I speak of the khums year. But we shall, inshallah, speak in depth in relation to the khums year and the different angles. We'll be looking at it from different angles and discussing it in great depth. So we shall come back to it. But here, everyone has a khums year. Now imagine your khums year is March the 13th. Okay, so in this time scale on slide 13, so March the 13th is your khums year. It starts on March the 13th, and then it ends on March the 13th the following year. Now, these are only questions, we're not going to answer them right now, okay? But what determines your khums year? Is it a totally optional choice? Do you choose it? Or Do your circumstances determine when your chumps year is? It's the latter, but we'll discuss that in more detail later on, maybe in two or three sessions. And then, although the circumstances determine when your chumps year is, are you allowed to alter and change your chumps year? If so, how? That's another point. Why is this 1 year period given? Why 1 year? Why not 1 month or 1 week? And what exactly happens when your chumps date arrives? What mechanisms precisely are at play and how? These are very important questions. Something is happening when your chumps date arrives. There's something which happens that is very important to understand. And inshallah, we'll come to that later on. Okay, so just to appreciate, so when your chumps year arrives, then you have to pay the chumps. You have to pay the chumps in relation to that one given year. And then another year passes, you would have to give the chumps in relation to that second year, and so on and so forth. But in any given year, the equation which has been written at the bottom of slide 13 is annual gains of a particular year. So the gains that you get. Now, depending on your definition of annual gains, but the annual gains of a given year minus the ma'une, okay, so all that in brackets, divided by 5, that is the sum that has to be paid on your chumps year. Now, annual gains we've discussed in great detail, minus ma'une. Ma'una are expenses of a certain type. We're going to start discussing that from today. And then once you deduct the ma'una from your annual gains, whatever is left, you divide by 5, and that is what you have to give on your chumps year. So that's a very broad formula, equation, and I just wanted you to always have this time scale in mind. Now, annual gains we've discussed. Now we want to discuss the ma'une. Okay, now just as a revision, this slide number 14 is just a revision for understanding what the term mal was. Remember, in annual gains, there were two definitions. Both of them had the term mal, which we defined and translated as belongings. Now, we've defined belongings before, that which is of value, and you're inclined towards it. That which is of value for the Sharia-abiding person. Now, here, that mal, that belonging, it may be a gain, it may be an earning. There are two different interpretations, according to the jurists. But I want to focus on the mal aspect, because the definition of annual gain had 3 indices. The first was malun, that belonging. Now, if it's malun, it's going to have the chumps levied upon it. Now, look at this example, just to appreciate the intricacies and the delicate nature of how to calculate, especially with this, if you're a farmer. If a percentage, slide 14, if a percentage X of a farmer's wheat is harvested this year and a percentage Y next year. When this year comes to an end, this year's harvest X will be deemed one's annual gains for this year, and the Y percentage will be deemed next year's annual gains. Now, that's very straightforward, because X percent has harvested this year, it qualifies as malon, a gain, a belonging. Now, it can be, it qualifies this, the harvest qualifies as both a gain and an earning for the farmer. So there's no problem there. If you remember, in the earning belongings, agricultural occupations was one of the examples there. And what the farmer gains in their harvest also qualifies as a gain in the absolute sense. But X percent has harvested this year, that much will be calculated in your annual gains part. Then you minus the ma'one, divide by 5. And then in the following year, you would calculate the Y percentage in the following year when the harvest actualizes then. Now, where things can become very intricate is this. Now imagine the harvest is yet to be actualized. So even X percentage has not harvested this year. For example, the wheat plant has yet to spike. That's when it's actualizing the harvest, the spiking of the wheat plant. Now, assuming the plant itself, not the spiking. So in this scenario we're discussing now, the harvest is yet to actualize. The spiking of the wheat plant has yet to actualize. The wheat plant is growing. We have a plant before us, but the spiking which terminates the harvest, that is yet to arise. So what we have is only a wheat plant. Now, assuming this wheat plant is of value and thus qualifying as malon, okay, it must be incorporated in the annual gains. And so when you have to, in this year's calculation, that wheat plant value is part of your annual gains. And that has to be calculated when you want to execute the equation annual gains minus ma'one divided by 5. And then the following year, when the harvest actualizes, here, that previous year's wheat plant minus spike value, that can be deducted because you've already sorted it out the previous year. And it's only the spiking and the value, the present value, minus that value you paid off the previous year, which has to be calculated. So if Marlon qualifies, then you have to calculate it in your annual gains. That was a point just to appreciate how delicate things can become. Okay, I'm sure you can think of many examples in your practical life. Please send your questions and we'll approach those and encounter them one by one, inshallah. Okay, slide 15. So the equation reads annual gains minus ma'one divided by 5. Annual gains we've discussed, and now we want to start and discuss what is meant by the ma'une. Concerning the accumulated belongings, whose essence is khums leviable, there is no necessity in paying off its khums immediately as one gains them or earns them. One is afforded a 1 year respite period out of divine grace, out of Allah's grace. Hence why we use the expression annual gains. Now this respite period only applies to class 7. Remember there were 7 classes of belongings whereupon the khums is levied. It's only in relation to class 7, the leftovers of the annual gains, where we see this 1 year respite period being afforded to the duty bound. So as you're earning, as you're gaining, during your khums year, the khums is levied on those things, on those belongings. But the payment of the khums is after that khums year is actualized. So when the khums year is actualized, the duty and obligation to pay the chums is there. What happens during the year is the chums is levied upon them. But the duty to pay off the chums is only at the chums year. Although, if you want, the option is there. As you're earning or gaining, even only 1 month into the year, only 1 month of the chums year, you've progressed only 1 month, and you're gaining and earning, you can pay off the chums of what you've gained or earned after 1 month if you want. And that's a very noble thing to do. But it's not necessary. Here, out of divine grace, you've been afforded 1 year. So although all the things you're gaining, the chums has been levied upon these things and is being levied as you're gaining during the year, the duty of payment is at the time of the chums date, the chums year. So you have been very graciously afforded a lenient time frame whereby you can pay the chums there. Naturally, if you were to pay the chums on everything as you're gaining or earning, you would be paying more chums rather than giving 1 year time where you can deduct all your ma'one as you're gaining and earning. Okay. Now, during this 1 year, you can deduct two forms of expenses. One is the ma'une, the other is the nafaqe. So the ma'une and the nafaqe, although ma'une would have sufficed, because whatever is a nafaqe qualifies as a ma'une. But whatever is a ma'une may not qualify as a nafaqe. These are two important terms. Maybe we'll send one or two questions just to, as a way of examination. This will be one question. But anyway, I want to define these two terms. So here, one can deduct two forms of expenses, the ma'una and the nafaqe, from that accumulating belongings of a given year. So from the annual gains of a given year, you can deduct the ma'una and the nafaqe, and any surplus remaining on the completion of one's 1 year respite period, whatever remains, a fifth of it has to be paid off as khums in the way of Allah, in the name of Allah, for the sake of Allah. At the end of the day, this is one of the ibadat. We have to treat it very carefully. So annual gains minus the ma'une, which we're going to discuss, divided by five, that is your khums that you have to pay after your year comes to an end, or when your year comes to an end. Now, I want to define these two terms, the ma'une and the nafaqe. Let's first sort out the nafaqe, because as I said, whatever is a nafaqe is a ma'une. So there was no, strictly speaking, there was no need for me to even bring this concept of the nafaqe. But I think it's worthwhile for you to know. So the nafaqe, translated as maintenance, these are expenses that are essential for one's livelihood. You know, the bare minimum, the bare essentials. That's the nafaqe. Then the ma'une is what you need. It's not the bare essentials, that which is on a par with your needs. Now that varies from person to person, depending on their family background, where they live, what their occupation is. Your needs differ on a par with your status quo. That is the ma'une. We'll speak about that in a minute. But we have a term called a nafaqe. That is the very bare essentials, such as a very basic house, basic bread to consume, a basic car to drive. Okay, so for example, a house with triple chalk coating is something more than your bare essentials, but it may be on a par with your need as a person who has X profession, X occupation, from X family background. It may be a very basic need, but it can't be seen as a very essential piece of livelihood, because you can do without it. But if you are someone who the family was always used to such coating, or you're a doctor, you're an architect, mechanic, you have a good job, whatever, you have a good way of earning, and it's on a par with your status quo, that would be okay. Or for example, buying a more than average car. That's not a nafaqa, but it can be a ma'une. Or having croissants rather than basic bread for breakfast. It's not a nafaqa, but croissants can qualify as your ma'une. Okay? So, but they don't qualify as your nafaqa. But that depends on the person. Now, this depending on the person is important to appreciate what we're speaking about. Now, look at this definition of ma'une on slide 15 also. The ma'une are expenses spent normally in a manner that does not qualify as extravagance, waste, transgression, sinning, or mindlessness. Now, here in brackets, you may encounter the phrase, be it spent for oneself or for acquiring profit. Now here, the reason the brackets have been added with such is that the ma'une, there are two types of ma'une. And we'll come to those later, maybe in this session. But I don't want to preoccupy your minds with the two types of ma'une yet. But this definition applies to both, naturally. So, the ma'une, their expenses, not the basic livelihood, bare minimum, or bare essentials, no. That which is normal for you, for the person, and it varies from person to person. Everyone's norm is different. That's very important to appreciate when speaking about the ma'une. So everyone's ma'une is different, everyone to their own. At the end of the day, annual gains minus ma'une divided by 5 equals your khums payment. So when you're calculating it, this ma'une, you have to calculate it on a par with your own selves, your own status quo. Now, it has to be, so it's an expense, but it has to be an expense which is on a par with you, on a par with your norm, and it has to avoid the following four concepts. Extravagance, israf, waste, tabdhir, transgression, which is isyan or sinning, and mindlessness, safa, spending, expenses mindlessly. These four, if you commit yourself to any of them when you're spending your expenses, if you do it extravagantly, if you do it wastefully, if you do it sinfully, if you do it mindlessly, remember the equation, annual gains minus ma'une divided by 5 equals your khums, what you have to pay after a year. Here, you've exited by spending extravagantly or mindlessly and so on and so forth. What you've spent will not qualify as a ma'une. So you can't deduct it from your annual gains, theoretically. And if you do, which usually one does because you're spending from your annual gains, you have to, at the end of the year, calculate a fifth of that expense and add it on at the end. You can't just deduct it from your annual gains and then whatever the sum is divided by 5 equals your khums payment. No. With every extravagant spending, with every wasteful spending, sinful spending, mindless spending, you would have to then pay a fifth of that spending because it's not yours. Now, why isn't it yours? I'll come to that in a minute. Remember, مَا غَنِمْتُمْ مِنْ شَيْءٍ فَأَنَّ لِلَّهِ خُمُسَهُ, that whatever it may be that you're gaining, a fifth of it is Allah's, the Prophet's. And today, the share of the Prophet and Allah is the Imam's. Three shares belong to the Imam. Well, all the shares are the Imam's. Now, here, the Imam owns a fifth of everything that you gain. And that's why you can, at the end, you divide it by five, because a fifth of whatever you gain is not yours. Now, you've been given this opportunity to deduct your ma'une, your expenses, from your annual gains. Okay? But if it's not a ma'une, that which you're spending is not a ma'une, you don't have a right to deduct it from the annual gains in its entirety. And the fifth of that non-ma'une expense, a fifth of it is not yours. Now, I'll just give a few examples here to understand this more clearly. So, extravagant spending is, for example, if I consume two portions of chips, fish and chips, two portions, and I am such that the average, the common layperson, when they look at this scene and they know me, the informed common layperson, on knowing who I am and seeing the consumption of two portions of fish and chips, they will say that is extravagant eating. You're eating much more than you should, that which is expected from you. One portion of fish and chips would have sufficed. You're consuming two. That which was your ma'une was one portion of fish and chips, and that you take from your annual gains. But the extra portion, you're not allowed to deduct from your annual gains. And if you do, a fifth of that has to be calculated at the end of the year. You have to make a note of it, because this was an example of extravagant spending. If you had put the second portion of chips in the fridge for the day after, no problem. But here you've consumed it. It was much more than that which was expected from you. That was extravagant spending, and that one portion which you went over the top, you have to calculate a fifth of it, and you have to make a note of it at the end of the year or during the year, so at the end of the year, that fifth is borne in mind. Okay? Because it wasn't yours. It wasn't yours to spend. Another example is that of wasteful spending, tabdhir. Imagine, for example, you're inviting six people over to your house and you purchase 10 portions of fish and chips. The six portions were consumed, and then the other four portions were thrown away. If they were put in the fridge for the next day, that would be okay, but they were thrown away. Or let's say out of the 10 portions of fish and chips, among six people, eight were consumed, and then two were thrown away. Why did you throw it away? When you throw it away, that's not ma'una anymore. That's not the expenses that you can deduct from your annual gains anymore. That which you can deduct from your annual gains are ma'una, but ma'una has to avoid the realms of wasteful spending. Otherwise, if you wastefully spend, that won't be ma'una. So the price of those two portions of fish and chips, which you threw away, is not ma'una. And it's as if that price is now incorporated in your annual gains, meaning that a fifth of it would be levied, the khums, and you would have to pay its 1/5 of it. Whereas if it was, you know, 10 portions and 10 people, all the 10 portions would be deducted from your annual gains. But now you've done something which no longer qualifies as a ma'one. You threw away two portions. So those two portions, it's as if the price of it, it's in your annual gains now. And therefore you would have to pay its khums, 1/5 of it. Because it doesn't qualify as ma'one. Okay? Another example is haram things. Let's say you go to the supermarket and you purchase a haram piece of food, which, and you consume it, for example, God forbid. You've purchased something which was haram. When you purchase something which is haram, that transaction is void. And here, if that X thing that you've consumed to eat was haram, since it was haram, it's a transgression from the Sharia, that will not qualify as ma'une. And so the price you paid, you gave to the supermarket, to the cashier, that price would be incorporated in your annual gains. Why did you spend through haram? It's not a ma'une, so you can't deduct that price from the annual gains. Actually, it's part of the annual gains. What do I mean when I say the price of that haram food that you've paid for is now incorporated in your annual gains? What is meant is, since it wasn't ma'une, it doesn't qualify as a ma'une, at the end of the year, 1/5 of that which you've paid has to be given. 1/5 of it has to be paid. Why did you spend something haram? Okay. And finally, mindless spending. Sometimes one can purchase a toy for their child, for example, for £10 at a shop which is very local in their area. But now they're traveling from afar, and let's say they're still not near their house, and they come to a shop and they see the same toy for 3 times the price. Okay, for 3 times the price. Maybe an example one can give here is, for example, there's a toy at your local shop for £10. The same toy you see in London, there's a shop, very expensive, called Harrods. Okay, and there the prices are very expensive because of the brand. There, the toy is £30, whereas the toy in your local area is £10. That's an example of mindless spending. £20 was given, but you could have easily bought it for £10. It would have made no difference to the child from whatever brand it was. Why did you pay an extra £20? That extra £20 can, excuse me, that £20 does not qualify as your ma'une. It's an example of mindless spending. It's an application of safah in Arabic. So here, that £20, it can't be deducted from your annual gains anymore. And actually, it's incorporated in your annual gains. So at the end of the year, when you pay 1/5, you pay 1/5 of that 20 also. Okay, so inshallah, that is clear. And inshallah, we'll come to other examples in this area. But within the definition of ma'une, what qualifies as a ma'une, you have to refrain from these four realms. So, but that which is important, slide 15, just continuing with ma'une, it says, depending on one's background, The common layperson has different expectations on how people from different backgrounds should spend because of need. So it all depends on your need. What is your need? But the need of different people is different because of their status quo, their expectations from them, because of their professions, because of their family background. What they need is different. You can't say, when you see different people of socioeconomic backgrounds with different professions, you can't say they all need the same car. But someone who's always been used to a Ford Escort, although I'm not sure if a Ford Escort is a very simple car today, but it's a car of many years ago, which I recall, but I'm not sure if it still exists or not, but this Ford Escort, a very simple type, this, for someone who has always been used to a Ford Escort, their family and their occupation, they can only afford such a thing. Let's say they were to purchase, through whatever means, a Mercedes. Here, that Mercedes would not be qualify as a ma'une for such a person. Let's say they inherited a great bulk, and then they suddenly bought a Mercedes. That's not their need. They don't need a Mercedes. Based on their occupation, on their family background, and the informed common layperson who knew these individuals for generations, they would be very surprised. That would be extravagant spending. And so that surplus, the Mercedes minus Ford Escort, whatever the surplus is, that would be incorporated in your annual gains. It would not qualify as a ma'one for you to deduct from your annual gains. And so in relation to that difference, the khums will be levied. Okay, so that's important to appreciate that point. Now, a general jurisprudential definition is any of the ma'une is any consumption or spending that is deemed normal for one, be it an obligatory spending, a recommended spending, a neutral spending, even a discouraged consumption or spending, but it's within one's norm, that's okay. With the discouraged, the makruh form, it's like purchasing makruh foods. That would still qualify as a ma'une. It's the haram foods which won't. And if you look, the wajib, the mustahab, the mubah, and the makruh classes are there. But with sins, no. You've exited the realms of ma'une. Inshallah, we'll end with this definition and we'll continue with slide 16 from the next session, inshallah. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi tahirin. Thank you.